Thanks.
To live is to remember, and to remember is to live, wrote the British poet and satirist Samuel Butler. If remembering is equated with living, no wonder memory is such a fundamental health concern. Hi, everyone. You are listening to WGXE's Conversations on a Tightrope. This is Atrevida speaking, and today's show will be a discussion about our precious gift of memory, how forgetful we can be, and if it should be something to concern us. And how do we cope when it does become a concern, with the possibility of it being dementia or the more common form of dementia, Alzheimer's? If you would like to call in to share an experience or add to the conversation during this discussion, please feel free to call WGXC at 518-828-0290. Helping me through this hour will be Kathleen Roop, the administrator of the Pines at Catskills, which is a nursing home and rehabilitation center located in Catskill. Mary Pat Leonard, a nurse with longtime experience with Alzheimer's, about 7 years. But before I introduce them, I would like to start by sharing a startling fact that I discovered in my research on Alzheimer's, which I found is now becoming increasingly diagnosed as early Alzheimer's, in ages as early as the 30s and 40s. So before I bring my guests into the conversation, I would like to play a brief 2-minute YouTube clip of a 20-year-old woman whose father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at 42 years old. It was uploaded by Shmoo on October 14, 2008. And since that time, she says her father passed away in 2009 at the age of 49. So let's hear what she has to say.
I'm Shmoo. I'm dealing with something in my family that a lot of younger people can't really relate to exactly. And it's hard when you feel like no one else can relate to you. It's actually the disease early onset Alzheimer's. My dad was diagnosed with it when I think I was 15 or 16, and I'm 20 now, so it's been around for a while. And before that, my aunt has it too. Well, she passed away at the age of 42. She was 38 when she was diagnosed. My dad, he was 44, 45 when he was diagnosed. Things are getting harder for him. My mom no longer works because he can't stay home by himself. He gets confused really easily. It's just really hard seeing your own parent go through this. I know I'm not a kid, but it's my dad, you know? Like, this disease isn't supposed to affect people that are young. Basically I'm making this video to anybody who is dealing with this. You're not alone. You're really not. My cousins had to go through it. My cousin was like 8 and 12 when their mom passed away from it. I'm lucky enough to have my dad in my life for this long. Because it's so hard to have somebody that you've looked up to your whole entire life. He's the best dad ever. And just to see him gradually get worse, It's like a stranger is taking over his body. And I know most people, and most younger people, have grandparents who have Alzheimer's. And it's comparable, but it's still different. It is. It's different. I'm not trying to say one is worse than the other, because it's a horrible disease, no matter who has it. I want someone to see this and hopefully think, I'm not alone. Somebody else understands what I'm going through. Because it sucks. It really sucks. I wish I could say it would get better. There's not much else you can do. inside. Just be there for your family. Help out as much as you can. It's a hard time for everyone.
That was Shmu, and there was a comment after that, and it said, I'm 14, and my dad is 50, and he has Alzheimer's disease. And it's hard when no one really understands what it's about. It's not hard to understand, but no one besides my mom can relate to it. And I really find that absolutely outlandish that such young people are getting it. But I want to thank Kathleen and Mary for coming here. But before you actually introduce each of yourselves, I would like to tell you about two personal instances in my youth that I still remember. When I was 18 years old, I went to the refrigerator and realized that I opened the door so I could put my purse in the refrigerator. And, you know, I laughed at it then. But then when I was 23, I was shopping with my child in a baby carriage, parked the carriage in front of the store, came out, walked down an entire avenue until I remembered that I had forgotten to take him with me. And I was horrified. So let me ask, could that have been an indicator of what was in store for me in my later years? Kathleen, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Kathleen Roop. I'm the administrator at the Pines at Catskill, and we're a rehabilitation and a nursing center. And many of the patients that come to our facility come for rehab but are older, and they have some maybe beginning stages of memory loss, and then we do have an Alzheimer's area as well. So we are used to dealing with people that are going through this, families and the residents themselves. And it's unique in the fact that although you could have many things wrong with you in your entire body, when you lose a part of yourself by having a memory loss, because that's really the relationship aspect of your life where you're actually able to talk to your family and you know, have a relationship. So this is so different for people. How do they deal with it? What do I do? And the stress that goes along with the caregivers. So we do see this quite a bit in both populations, obviously in the rehab population to a much milder degree.
Yeah. And Mary.
Hi, I'm Mary Pat Leonard. I'm a nurse at the Pines Nursing Home also. I've worked with dementia patients about 7 years. I helped set up a dementia unit. And they are very special people. What I find most interesting is that they come in all shapes and sizes. They come in all stages, and their families need as much care and comfort and as the residents themselves do, especially with the rehab, because they're coming in, they're trying to get rehabilitated from a physical condition, and they still have that overriding mental problem that's going on. So the families are kind of like, all right, I want to take care of the physical aspect, but what's happening mentally, you know, and a lot of times once the physical aspect gets a little better, the mental status will straighten out a tad too. So it's an overall encompassing program.
Yes, the first thing that I think would be great to talk about is the attempt that must be made to eliminate other diseases such as Parkinson's and how symptoms also mimic depression. Why don't I just play this quick YouTube video by Kenneth Robbins. He's a psychiatrist from the University of Wisconsin. It was uploaded by health.com. And he talks a little bit about the effect, how they both mimic, how depression mimics Alzheimer's. And I'll play that right now.
Okay. Well, let me talk a couple of about a couple of aspects of dementia. Elderly people who experience depression often look like they're demented, and there's a syndrome called pseudo-dementia, where people appear to be demented, but actually they're depressed. And that's because depression can affect concentration, it can affect motivation, and it can affect attention. And if all those things are being affected and you're older, so you're having trouble with your memory, you're not really focusing very well, you don't have much energy, people can start looking like they're demented, and instead of ending up on an antidepressant, people assume this is a dementia process and they never get the proper treatment for their depression. So it's really critical when someone is considering whether some somebody is demented to at least consider the possibility that this may be depression rather than dementia. In terms of dementia itself, we know the risk of dementia increases dramatically after age 65 to the point where by age 85, 40 or 45% of people are able to be diagnosed with dementia. Now, dementia means that somebody is having difficulties with their memory and with some other cognitive process. So it could be spatial orientation, it could be speech, it could be executive functioning, which is planning and organizing their thoughts. The most common cause of dementia is Alzheimer's disease in this country, and Alzheimer's disease causes about two-thirds of dementia. Other common causes of dementia are vascular dementia, multiple small strokes, Lewy body dementia, which is a specific pathologic finding, is about 10% of dementias, and Parkinson's disease can cause dementia. So there are a number of other causes for dementia, but they all lead to the same unfortunate outcome, which is that people's memory gradually deteriorates and their other cognitive functions gradually deteriorate. With dementia in particular, there have been a number of recent studies that make it clear that exercise, both physically and mentally, seem to both decrease the risk for dementia and decrease the slope of the downward spiral that people go through when they become demented. So if one can stay physically active and if one can continue to exercise one's brain through social activities, through puzzles, through staying active with whatever intellectual pursuit is interesting, it seems to slow down the course of dementia. Now, physical exercise seems to have the same physical exercise does the same thing. It helps to slow the course of dementia and decrease the likelihood of experiencing dementia.
Okay. That's why I do the radio station, so I can keep my brain occupied. Let's talk a little bit about that, the idea that some people have too quickly been diagnosed with Alzheimer's when they really are depressed. And I think many of us have periods of depression. So what do you think of that, Kathleen?
Well, I know a lot of times we'll find someone who's lost a spouse. And, you know, they've been very close to that person and they're having a rough time adjusting to the death of their loved one for, you know, 50 years they may have been married. And so there's a time of that adjustment that they really should come out of their depression, so to speak, or their ability to adjust to the death. And they may not. They may be having a harder time doing that, particularly without any help, medications, family, or a new interest. And so many times people will say, oh, well, they're getting demented. They're older, too. And that you'll find that if the depression is treated and that steps are taken, then that won't be the case anymore. They'll find reasons to live and new attachments. So we do see that in those type of individuals, as well as people come in for rehab and they've had some anesthesia, and the family will come and see them, and they may go into a delirium, which is a short, sudden onset of memory loss or confusion. Mm-hmm. And families will say, what happened? You know, and they may think that it's a new onset of dementia, which, you know, sometimes is more difficult to diagnose because there's cardiac reasons why you may have a vascular dementia or something may have happened where there had been a blood clot or things like that. So, you know, are they going to clear? Are they going to get back to where they are? So there are other things that can influence dementia. Usually dementia starts slow and progresses, whereas a sudden onset is usually not dementia.
Yes, it sounds like it's a slow, but the thing is, they say that it's not necessarily age related. I mean, there are people who are 102 who great minds. I wish I had their minds, and most of us want that to continue. You know, it's wonderful to live a longer life, but we certainly want our memories mm-hmm. there, and this is the most awful part of this disease. So, before we continue anymore, I'm going to play a very beautiful song. I found it on YouTube. It's called "I'm Still Here." Okay, It was uploaded by Gadzook Publishing in 2009, and it's From the Victim's Point of View, written by Chad Steele and Joe Rubino, to accompany the book Dementia, The Journey of Caring for Our Father at Home by Paul McCormick and Jean Thayer. And it was London Lane Records. So let's listen to this, because I think it's a beautiful song.
When you look into my eyes and see I'm not there, just call out my name. The sound of your voice brings me back home. Then I'm not so scared. If I forget your name or who you are, please don't take it quite so hard. If I shy away from your hand, hope you'll understand. Don't get so frustrated. I'm slowly losing control. But you came to my rescue. You hold me up, stand by me. I'm still here. Hope you laugh at my stories. You've heard 100 times. That's all I have now.
So there was the song. Now, remember, this is for you, and I would love if anyone is caring for someone or is a little worried or would just like some information, please call 518-828-0290 wherever you live. And remember, it doesn't have to just be Green in Columbia. So what I wanted to start talking about was the idea of holistically trying to do things that would help delay or maybe even some people, some doctors out there may even believe that you can prevent, although right now they have no scientific facts that would state that you can prevent Alzheimer's, but we never know, right? So there are things, Kathleen, like diet, and they talk a lot about the Mediterranean diet. And because I try real hard to stay away from bad carbs, eat good fat, and take my supplements.
And
but
how
I'm,
successful are you at that?
Well, no, I'm good at that. But I'm not good at the other two. Well, exercise, it's just, I think that's exercise and my insomnia, I think, are going to kill me. All the other stuff, I'm a good girl. So, what do you think about? You know, what have you read anything, or do you see that it's better?
I think that you know, definitely we're finding out that the diet and the exercise is good for a multitude of things. I think just being a human being, that this is the best practice that you can have against any disease. We're finding the human body just really responds to exercise. With people with dementia, you know, you're going to increase your oxygen level, so hopefully that'll have to help on the vascular side of things that can happen with dementia. A lot of dementias are caused vascularly, which is the same thing we're all familiar with, because we all know stop smoking, high blood pressure, keep your cholesterol down, and we know that this is going to prevent heart disease and vascular constriction with the cholesterol. And when you do all these things, it also helps the dementia, because there's vascular system within our brain, and the same thing's happening in the brain that's happening to your heart. So the more we can keep a good diet and exercise, the better off we're going to be in with dementia as well.
Well, you see, that's why I think it's important to emphasize, you know, people who just, you know, put it aside and say, well, when I get older, because so many young people are out there today, and this is an opportunity for them to kind of seriously think about the idea of eating healthier and getting the exercise to get that blood flowing and to maybe really prevent it, even if they have other things. But there is also supplements sometimes, and there's always these controversies. You know, I know the pharmaceutical industry isn't too crazy about all supplements, but I think there's probably some, even though they don't have the research to confirm it, I think that they could possibly be some good. Now, I don't take ginkgo biloba, but I think there is sometimes some controversy on that and other supplements. What have you found?
What's the main problem is that they're not controlled. The over-the-counter drugs, the vitamins and the minerals and all that, there's no FDA control over how much is really in them, how many you're really taking. They've never run a whole study to that effect. The ones they've studied on is the ginkgo, and it doesn't hurt you. But they're showing that it doesn't help the Alzheimer's.
They haven't seen any conclusive evidence.
There's no conclusive evidence that it is going to help your memory or halt the Alzheimer's progression. Nothing they found yet. And there's so much research going on daily, and there's thousands and thousands of people involved with research that they really haven't found anything that will cure Alzheimer's. They're still trying to find out why it occurs. There are drugs out there that will stop the progression, but for a while. Mm-hmm. But it will not totally. You will always have it, and up until the day you die.
Yes,
you know, and different ones progress faster than others, no matter what they're on, you know. But there's two main drugs that they use constantly for that. And one they can use all the way through from the mild stage right up to the end stage, and then there's another one that they start when it's a moderate stage to the end stage. You know, and again, it's with diet and exercise and overall trying to. Keep your brain informed, doing crossword puzzles, Sudokus, you know, reading, trying to read as long as you can, dexterity, you know, doing puzzles, your hand puzzles and things like that, whatever can keep your mind active, and just conversations, carrying on conversations.
Just talking about all of this, even though I do believe in diet, good diet, staying away from sugar and all that kind of stuff, I'm feeling it more and more that exercise is so important. I think even I read somewhere with osteoporosis, they find that exercise is even better.
Definitely.
And that's another thing that I suffer with osteoporosis. So I think emphasizing that, you know, don't take the car out. Walk that half a mile and half a mile back. And
I think there's a lot of good literature out now with weights. Is that with the elderly, in order to stay fit and have that strength in your muscles and your bones, that just small weights do a dramatic improvement, and of course with balance, because again, as you get older, one of the main things that actually come into a person's life as they get older is that may experience falls, and that could be detrimental.
Yes.
So using those weights, they're finding to be very beneficial, and we incorporate that in all our exercise programs.
Now, I read that there was another connection between diabetes and dementia, and there was a study that followed over 1,000 men and women aged 60 and older who took a glucose test to find out if they were diabetic or pre-diabetic, and they were tracked. And in all, 232 developed dementia, either Alzheimer's, vascular dementia, or cause dementia or another form. Mm-hmm. But they don't know that diabetes increases the risk of dementia. They know it, but they don't really know why. Mm-hmm. Although maybe exercise again, because people I don't know how many people with diabetes also do a lot of exercise, because that sounds, you know, where that would be a problem.
And again, I think it ties back in with the vascular. They do have issues with their feet and their vascular.
Definitely.
And particularly in their legs and things. Yes. Like that. So again, that carries over to the brain.
Yes. And so it's pretty scary, because we have now so many young people who are being diagnosed with diabetes.
Yes,
and if this is the path we see, mm-hmm. In front of us, we have to start talking about Alzheimer's. We have to start talking about memory loss. We have to start really looking at ourselves and figuring out, you know, hey, is this it? And if it isn't, maybe I should start watching how I'm eating and exercising and getting more
sleep.
And
that's what it all reverts back to, is good exercise and nutrition and again, your mental capabilities and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an overall general, I'm doing a good thing.
Yes. And now there's also, I want to go to the genetics, because I read something about a PSE2 gene. I know there's a study that I found on the internet called the DIAN, D-I-A-N. It's a dominantly inherited Alzheimer network, and it's mm-hmm. a six-year study, and it's following multiple generations of family members across the globe with early onset Alzheimer's. And they are reporting on a Seattle family that is providing insights. I found it on the internet, and so if you want to look up more, I'm sure you'll find it. It's DIAN, Dominantly Inherited Alzheimer Network. So what can you tell me more about the genes, the gene that says this, and the kinds of tests, if there are any, that can find out, if people want to find out?
I think that as other disease and learning more and more with DNA. I mean, in the past, think about it, we never had that luxury of DNA before. And now that the discovery of DNA and the genes and the chromosomes, scientists are able to really tear that apart and come down to the gene level, and all of us have 23 pairs and 46 chromosomes. So we have one from our mom and one from our dad that are influencing us. And what they're finding, that especially in early onset Alzheimer's disease, which would be 30 to 60, because most people do get it after 60, in the early onset, they're finding that there is a type known as a familial Alzheimer's disease, and that's 5% of the population. And there's actually a gene that mutates, and it causes abnormal proteins.
Uh-huh.
And we already know in Alzheimer's that now, actually, they can do a CAT scan, and they can find these proteins, where before they had to do it by biopsy, you know, after the person had died, where they find the proteins and the clusters in the brain. And so if somebody has this gene mutation, FAD, familial Alzheimer's disease, they have a 50-50% chance of inheritance of that, and then coming down with the disease. So these are people that have it in their, like the lady that you had played early on, the young lady,
mm-hmm.
That obviously was a genetic onset of the disease.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, if I was young now, and I'm learning all of this, and I'm hearing more about it, I would love to know if it's there, because I would say to myself, not that I'm going to get it, but hey, you know, maybe I really should start looking into living a better, healthy life with exercise, and I can bypass this. I mean, some people may not want to worry themselves about it, but I'm different. I would probably want to know, and it's just that I don't think, even if First of all, I don't know whether the insurance companies pay for that kind of test, unless the doctor definitely felt it was necessary, maybe. But from what I understand, although I haven't been told exactly how much, that it's might be an expensive blood test, right?
Or yeah, they use it mainly when they do the clinical testing, you know, when they have the research groups out and they're bringing the people that they want to watch. That's when they'll do these kind of tests for their clinical research. It's not an everyday. You can't walk in and say, I want an APOE test done. It is very, very expensive.
Unless you're willing to really pay big bucks.
Probably.
Which is, yeah.
I'm sure they'd make an exception for money, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that would be with the blood test, because they
right.
say here that I have a little notation on my page here. I say I want this.
Yeah.
It says it is the most accurate so far, because it the blood of patients with the brain disease contains antibodies not found in healthy people.
Right.
So that is a possibility. Mm-hmm. And I have something here, and it says, current tests for Alzheimer's relying on brain imaging and spinal tap accurately diagnose about 90% of patients. One could imagine our test being used a cheap frontline screen, and at least if you test positive there, you could go for these more expensive things that couldn't be used as a general screen. Well, it says here, if we're ever going to get an Alzheimer's drug, we need a much better early diagnostic in order to really start developing something to, if there is going to ever in the future be a prevention of it.
Right.
I mean, if they want to keep me alive until I'm 150, I would like them to find this, quite frankly.
Working on it.
I will. Now, the other thing in promising research is the retinal imaging. They have this retinal imaging. And I found this really, and you know something? I found this. I went to get my new lenses the other day. And I was talking to this gentleman, told him about the radio show, and he actually lives in Hudson. He was fixing my glasses, and he says, well, you know, they have this with the retina. I didn't know that. A lot of people don't realize how it's connected with the brain, and that this is going to be possible someday, where you'd be able to go to the eye doctor and actually have an image taken where they can see, I think it's the plaque.
Right.
That,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's wonderful. That would be such, and that would probably be a much more affordable way of trying to find out, or at least alerting people of what's going on in their body.
When you think about modern medicine now, the how much we've advanced over the last couple of decades,
yes.
It really is amazing. But at the same time, there's always cost involved, and our research seems to take a long time before something then becomes, you know,
yes.
usable on the market. But being able to spot that protein that carries the cholesterol in your bloodstream is would be really
Is that
terrific.
What they call the protein tau?
The APOE.
The APOE.
Mm-hmm. The APOE, amyloid plaques, I think, that they have. Now, there, and of course, we did previously when I was talking with you ladies, that we were saying about immunotherapy for Alzheimer's, how much of that is going on in helping the disease, although there's not that much going
on.
No,
they're still doing a lot of research on that. The research is just phenomenal of what they're trying to. Drug-wise, immunotherapy, genetic testing, it's all coming together. I mean, 15 years ago, we knew hardly anything about it, and the only way to truly diagnose, and still is the final definitive way, is to do an autopsy, after the person has died. But now we can do a lot of the testing and come up with an awful lot of, okay, this is, you probably have Alzheimer's and this is how we want to treat you. So with the mild, in the beginning stages, they can start in with those medications right away and prolong that residence progression, of the disease. So
mm-hmm.
we've come an awful long way
yes.
in the few years we've really knuckle down.
Yeah, I mean,
it's phenomenal.
You know, there may be many things that we have to knock with technology, but this is one of the best.
This is huge.
Uses of it.
And I think the what's very interesting is too is that there's a lot of research only because you know, obviously so many people are affected by it, but the cost associated with it is just phenomenal.
Yes.
You know, think about all the people that are in nursing homes, the people, the caregivers at home who are going through the stress of, you know, the progression of the disease and trying to take care of their loved ones. The numbers are staggering, and so is the cost.
Yes. I really can't imagine what people go through when they're trying so hard to help their loved one and seeing them kind of further and further away from them, you know, because we all need those connections, and we hate to see the loss of those connections. That's what keeps us vibrant.
It is, and I've always said it. Alzheimer's disease affects the families way worse than the person that has the disease, because the families are literally watching these people fade before their eyes, and the one that has the disease has no clue what's going on. You know, by the time they hit the end stage, they can no longer recognize their family members, where the daughter comes in and says, "Hi, Mom," and there's absolutely no recollection there. It's so hard on the families themselves, you know, where the patient is just going about their ordinary business in their own little world, and it's extremely hard to watch the families go through this.
I recently heard on a news broadcast, Pat Robertson was interviewed. I don't know if anybody heard about that, but he had said that he felt that a person should be able to divorce their mate if they have Alzheimer's. And I was a little shocked that he should say something like that. I'm not saying that a person should feel that. I do understand, though, if you have early onset Alzheimer's in the 40s, that's really devastating, because your partner really, you know, you're really not having a relationship anymore. And Pat Robertson says it is like a death. And so I sort of understand that. But in your later years, because it reminds me of, I don't know whether, you know, I understand, you know, I recently have a 91-year-old friend who has a gentleman she met in Rochester, and she tells me, you know, they have so much they like to talk about and everything. His wife has Alzheimer's, so now, sure, let them have a relationship. My goodness, life is so short, and if you can keep these memories going and you can share something, I mean, this is what you need to make life worthwhile living.
Definitely.
So I mean, he sounded like it's just coming from him being a religious person and so on and so forth. Seemed a little bit out of the way. But it is like a death. And I did have one I want to throw out there for people just to make them worry even more. I found this other name. It says Lewy, L-E-W-Y, body dementia. It's called LBD. And Lewy was the name of a person researching Parkinson's disease. And his name was scientist Frederick H. Lewy. And he found abnormal protein deposits that disrupt the brain's normal functioning. And they're in the area of the brain stem where they deplete the neurotransmitter dopamine, causing Parkinsonian symptoms. But in Lewy body dementia, these abnormal proteins are diffused throughout other areas of the brain, including the cerebral cortex. So when it exists either in pure form or in conjunction with other brain changes, including those typically seen in Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's. So it's not Alzheimer's, but it's another type of dementia. Mm-hmm. And have you ever had any that were diagnosed with that?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah. The dementia people that have the Lewy body, they could be talking to you fine right now, and within seconds, they won't know who you are. They'll become very agitated. It's like a night and day change for no apparent reason, that it just shuts off and shuts back on. Your brain's in constant motion, it seems like, and it's very, very hard to watch, you know, and
it is rare, though.
It is very rare.
That must be devastating. Oh, my goodness.
It is.
Well, some of the Alzheimer's or the dementias patients come with behavior disturbances. And I think they're the hardest thing for caregivers to deal with is the behaviors that change. And some of them can be, you know, they get anxiety. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of times they have, they're delusional. And so they become afraid. And so they actually think things are happening that aren't happening. So there's fear, there's anxiety from that. And in the early stages as well, people are afraid of what's going to happen, and they get angry. So there's various emotions that come with it because, again, in the early stages, people may be hiding that they have a memory issue.
Denial. That's one of the stages, yes.
And then they'll write, you know, they'll keep notes for themselves and really try to cover it up. But, you know they're losing their memory. And so that makes them very angry sometimes.
Well, I just recently told a friend of mine, I said, you know, I think I'm going to just write down when I do something. I'm going to write it down and say, oops, I know it's not dementia or anything, but I lost my keys again, couldn't find them. They were standing right in front of me. I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to kind of, maybe when I look back, I'll say, oh, okay, you didn't do it that often. Okay, it's all right. But just to kind of keep, you know, myself on top of things, because there is that period of denial that I read about. And also, people who have Alzheimer's or the dementia, there are dangerous medicines that are supposed to be not good for it, like antipsychotic medications
have to be very careful what you're giving the resident, especially if they're already on the Namenda and Aricept that's specifically for Alzheimer's dementia. Yes, there's quite a few. They do some antipsychotics, and it's only if we can't control the environment, talk to them one-on-one and calm them down, change their sleep habits a little bit. Their diet, again, comes into play. You know, so they will use some, but they try to stay away, like the Haldols and things like that can make it even worse. It can go in reverse on a dementia, or even just an elderly person, they can.
Yeah, I'm not big on medications. Yeah. I've stayed away from it, so I try very hard. But I'm going to really scare the men out there. I'm going to play about a minute or so of. Will you play that for me? Thank you, Tom.
G60.
Mild cognitive impairment is a condition where people have problems with memory and is often considered to be the first stage in the development of Alzheimer's disease. Now, new research finds mild cognitive impairment may affect more men than women. Dr. Bruce Lamb did not take part in the study, but is a neuroscientist at Cleveland Clinic.
The major finding of the paper really is that men have higher rates of mild cognitive impairment than women. And this is really a bit of a surprise, again, because of what I just told you, that on the other hand, women have higher rates of Alzheimer's disease.
Mayo Clinic researchers studied nearly 2,100 people aged 70 to 89. Results showed 19% of men had mild cognitive impairment, compared to 14% of women. Researchers say additional studies will help determine if gender-related factors might play a role in the disease.
So it suggests that either then women maybe convert more quickly from this mild cognitive impairment stage to Alzheimer's disease, or that men sort of are extended longer in this mild cognitive impairment before they finally develop Alzheimer's disease.
Complete results can be found in the journal Neurology. For Cleveland Clinic News Service, I'm Erica Foreman.
All right, so that was a Dr. Bruce Lamb, and that was from the Cleveland Clinic. And so now, okay, you men, we all thought it was just the women, but and really, men are not too good at watching their health.
Definitely.
I mean, most. I'm not saying all, but, you know, some of them try their best, but a lot of them don't want to. I know I've had very stubborn men in my life that they just don't listen. So that is something that they have to worry about. And there's also two other things. There are statin drugs to lower cholesterol, and it's curcumin on Alzheimer's, or that's turmeric That's curcumin is in turmeric, you know, mm-hmm. where I love it, actually. It's supposed to be very good for you.
It's good. Mm-hmm.
And high blood pressure.
Right. And so again, it goes back to vascular.
The vascular. See, that's all that's really it.
Ties in.
I found the solution, folks.
Yes, you have.
you really have to start getting out there, and I'm going to get on my bike that I bought 2 years ago and still haven't gone on it. But I think it's really important that we all do some of that, you know? Now, I really wanted to discuss, I got very interested in this SPECT controversy. Have you heard of that? The SPECT? It's an imaging, it's about this imaging, and it's done by a Dr. Amen. It's very expensive. And I know that it's a sonogram or, here it is. I have it right in front of me. I didn't lose it. I was going to tell you just now. Okay, help me. I forgot where I put it. And he's a child and adult psychiatrist, a brain imaging specialist, and a best-selling author, and a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, the CEO and medical director of Amen Clinics in Newport Beach in San Francisco, California, Washington, and Reston, Virginia. Now, what they do is they do these sonograms, these imagings, and they're rather expensive, but there is controversy with some people. Some doctors actually do...
brain scans.
Do these scans. In the hope that it will give them an idea of what's going mm-hmm. on with a person's brain. I mean, they run anywhere from $2,500 to $3,500 for it. But
and the brain shows up, the brain will show up in the middle part of it, won't be so much affected, but it'll start maybe at the stem, and that would be a mild one. And as it goes around the circumference of the brain, you maybe get into a more moderate one, and then in a severe one, all but maybe the center, so that the memory cells are actually destroyed and the neurons cannot function anymore. So the brain isn't able to go through simple tasks. You know, your activities of daily living, brushing your teeth, you know, getting dressed, you know, all these things just go away.
Yes.
In the later stages.
And
so it's when you have like a serious memory problem, things that you need to be concerned about is if a person can't take care of themselves, of course. They're not eating, they're not bathing. That's one of the major signs where people may get lost. You hear that a lot.
They leave, yes.
You know, so you get lost or you can't follow directions or even retrace, like with your keys. You said, you know, you lost your keys. All of us have lost our keys. Most of us in our mind can retrace our steps back and at least begin to look for them. With somebody with severe dementia problems, they can't do that. They can't sequence back.
Yes. Sometimes I want to sequence back maybe too long, and I say to myself, well, maybe that's okay if I can't remember. It's been a while back. But I do try to do that. You know, I have this I taught for a short time, and there was this program called STAR with in the elementary school. And I never thought it was that great for elementary school students, but I really think it would be great for people who are worried about their memory because it's called STAR. And if you remember the word star and you go to do something, just stop for a second. Think about what you're about to do, you know? And then that's the T for think. So you stop. You think about what you're doing, why you're going to do. Then you do it. You act on it. And then you review it. And, you know, it really has helped me at times because I found that when I'm rushing, I have a lot of my problems happen to me. Mm-hmm. So I say to myself, oops. Star. Stop. Okay, I think about it and I do this. And I think it just takes that stress off of you and you really then you're concentrating more on what you're doing so that you don't forget. And I think that's part of the problem. We were all in such a hurry. We're in a hurry for everything. We're in that car. We want to get there 1 minute before the next person so that we can enter our casket faster. It's a part of all of that. And so I just saw this on the internet, and it seemed really they find it very helpful. Of course, it's big business if you have the money to have it. But there are people who this is what it stands for. Now I finally saw it. It has an international reputation, this organization, for using SPECT, a single photon emission computed tomography. And it's an imaging for the purposes of diagnosis and treatment recommendations relating to mental health. Now, they don't just do this for memory loss. They also do it for other mental problems. So they, because they show that it can, they can kind of trace the brain of normal, healthy people and see what's going on in the brain. But there is a controversy, but although I saw only one doctor who felt controversial about it, with it. So it's something, if anybody's out there and they want to find out all about, they have lots of money and they want an expensive blood test and they want to get a brain scan and keep up on the retinal imaging, maybe that could help. Mm-hmm. Now, I see that you supplied me with a whole bunch of wonderful, wonderful information, Kathleen. Thank you. And the first one that I have here is the Alzheimer's Disease Education and Referral. So all you can center, and you can remember it by ADEAR, Adir. Yes. A dear friend of mine.
That's
a dear, right?
Great site.
It's beautiful.
Is it? And yes, you were telling me about that. It has a whole bunch of very helpful resources on it. And it offers information and publications in English and Spanish for families and caregivers and professionals on diagnosis, treatment, patient care, caregiver needs. So if you're a caregiver and you're about to just, bang your head against the wall, that's right. And you can get on this site and find help and get education. And so I think that is a wonderful site. I'm going to go on it and put it in my favorites because it's something that you can refer to. You should really get it and put it in your favorites if you're on the computer and look at that. They also have a number if you don't have a computer, and that's 1-800-438-4380, toll free. They're located in Maryland. Then they also have the Alzheimer's Association, which is a very easy web page. It's alz.org. And their number, toll free, is 1-800-272-3900. And then they have an elder care locator if you need help and you need to find someone to help you. It's eldercare, care.gov. Then they have a National Library of Medicine, Medline Plus. That's MEDLINEPLUS.gov. Then they have the National Institute on Aging Information Center. And that toll-free number is 1-800-222-2225. And you can always go to these and they give you regular alerts. I happened to have gotten a lot of information on the Johns Hopkins website. They're really quite informative. They send me these emails and they have special books or papers they write. They call them the white papers on various illnesses, whether it be Alzheimer's or osteoporosis, and you can buy that through them. But they give a lot of good information. So that's the Johns Hopkins site, which I don't have the exact site in front of me. But they're all very, very good sites, and I think you should take the time out to do this. Now, I really have to say, I just thought that I was going to sit here and talk about this all by myself and tell you how much I forget things. But Kathleen and Mary have been really nice enough to come in and talk about this and make it so much more helpful and informative. And when I went to the Pines at Catskill, which is in Jefferson Heights, right?
Right.
I didn't go through the building, but I was quite impressed. It gave me a nice feeling when I walked in, which is something you really want to feel. And it is a rehabilitation center, so you do have probably even younger people there that need rehabilitation. Is that right?
Yes, we do. We have people in their 30s, 40s, 50s.
Okay, so you do that, and they also have that. How big a facility is it?
There's 138 beds, and we have 4 units, and most of them specialize, either in the rehab or the longer term, and there's an area for dementia. And we have many specialists there. We have a rehab specialist who comes in. We have psychiatrists, psychologists, people that help us with urinary problems and bladder problems and physical therapy and OTs and speech. And we have physicians there almost every day, nurse practitioner, certified in wound therapy, multitude of specialists that we do have.
And I suppose people could stop in and get information if they so wanted to.
Absolutely. We're open for the public. We're there for the public. Our doors are always open. We take tours 24/7.
Oh, do you?
And we
I
take,
didn't know that.
Yeah. We also take admissions 24/7, too.
Okay. So I thought it was a very nice. And I went in there just to ask if they could direct me where I could find some caregivers, and they said, well, would you, yeah, and they came right in, jumped in to give me and look up all this information and have this show. So I am so thankful you're here, and I would like to just tell you, I'm going to end up, instead of my regular ending, I'm going to end up with my Kodachrome. This is a song by Simon and Garfunkel. It happens to be the literal interpretation is the when they made it in the 60s, I think, right? And they were comparing black and white and color. But there is a metaphor behind there, and people have different interpretations. Mine is that life in color is vibrant, and it gives you your memories. And this is what this is about. Life has all of these colorful memories. To lose it is an awful thing. So please, I'm ending, and goodbye. And I hope to see you next month on the second Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. Go ahead.
Wonder I can think at all, and my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Everything looks worse in black and white. Kodachrome.